Audio Journal is a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hey everyone, this is Anna, and along with Nick and Chris, we would like to welcome you to Audio Journal Sports Page. This is a program by, for, and about sports, activities, adventure, and information involving people with a variety of disabilities. Okay, I'm going to start off here with this article. Team USA athlete roster for 2026 Milan Cortina Winter Paralympics. 68 athletes have been named to the U.S. Paralympic team for the Milan Cortina Games across para hockey, Nordic skiing, wheelchair curling, alpine skiing, and snowboarding. The games run from March 6th through the 15th. On January 2nd, the first of 17 players were named to the hockey team, seeking a fifth consecutive Paralympic title. Caden Beasley, Liam Cunningham, Travis Dodson, David Eustace, Declan Farmer, Noah Grove, Malik Jones, Griffin Lamar, Jen Lee, Joss Miskowitz, Evan Nichols, Josh Pauls, Brody Roybo, and Jack Wallace. On January 16th, the last three players were named Brett Bolston, Kevin McKee, and Landon Utke. On February 2nd, the first 12 para-Nordic skiing athletes were announced by Oksana Masters, who holds the U.S. record of 14 Winter Paralympic medals. She's joined by seven-time Paralympic medalist Kendall Gresh, seven-time Paralympian Aaron Pike, seven-time Paralympic medalist Dan Nossen, four-time Paralympic medalist Jack Adikoff, who will race in the men's visual impairment category with guides Peter Walter and Reed Goebel, three-time Paralympic medalist Sydney Peterson, two-time Paralympian Danny Aravik, Josh Sweeney, Max Nelson in the men's visual impairment category alongside August Gus Schatzlein, and Aaron Martin. The team also includes Paralympic rookie Jack Berry and Nicole Zeno. On February 16th, Michael Nealon was awarded bipartisan spots invitation-based qualification by the International Ski Federation, also known as IFIS, and International Biathlon Union. In wheelchair curling, Laura Dwyer and Steve Empt earned the first spots by winning the U.S. Paralympic Trials for Mixed Doubles, an event that makes its Paralympic debut in 2026. U.S. Curling then named its roster for the team event. Matthew Thumbs, Ayuna Oremeg, Sean O'Neill, Dan Rose, and Katie Verderberger. Empt, Thumbs, and Urechameg are returning Paralympians. Dwyer, O'Neill, Rose, and Verderberger are set to make their Paralympic debuts. The U.S. seeks its first medals in wheelchair curling, which was added to the Paralympic program in 2006. Pyeongchang gold medalist Andrew Kirka, alpine skiing, and Noah Elliott for snowboarding were the first athletes to make the team in their respective sports. Kirka, a 32-year-old Alaskan pilot who owns a bed of breakfast, won the U.S. most recent para-alpine gold medal in the sitting downhill in 2018. Kelly O'Driscoll made her first para-alpine team in the standing classification just before turning 32 years old. The registered nurse made her FIS level international race debut in 2024, her world championship debut in March 2025, sixth, and eighth place finishes. Her World Cup debut in December of 2025 and then earned her first World Cup within 2 days after that. The rest of the Alpine team was named February 24th. Meg Gustafson in the visually impaired division with guide Spencer Gustafson, I'm sorry, her brother, Audrey Crowley, Allie Johnson, Noe Bury, Patrick Halgren, Andrew Harrigay, Jesse Keefe, Tyler McKenzie, Michael O'Hearn, and Spencer Wood in standing, and Haley Griffin, Salo O'Brien, Anna Soens, Lori Stevens, Jasmine Bamber, Matthew Brewer, Davy Drugan, Blake Eaton, Robert Anikel, Kyle Towelman, and David Williams in sitting. Elliot, 28, won bank slalom gold and snowboard cross bronze in his Paralympic debut in 2018, then placed fourth and sixth in those events in 2022. Kate Delson, a 20-year-old who earned snowboard cross silver at the 2025 World Championships, makes her Paralympic snowboard debut. The rest of the snowboard team was named February 24th. Brenna Huckabee and Mike Schultz in the double L1, and Jack Hamway, Keith Gable, Zach Miller, and Joe Flabin in the double L2. Team Dwyer EMT defeats Ricker Sampson to win U.S. Paralympic Curling Team Trials. Team Dwyer EMT defeat Team Ricker 9-7 in the Wheelchair Mixed Doubles Curling Trials Finals and punch their tickets to the Winter Paralympics in Cortina. Okay, I also found this article. It's athletes with Massachusetts ties qualify for Milano Cortina 2026 Winter Olympics. Let's see. We have athletes from Massachusetts who were selected to compete so far are Alex Carpenter, ice hockey. He is from North Reading and he went to Boston College. Then we have Jack Eichel, ice hockey from North Chelmsford, and he went to Boston University. We had David Eustace, sled hockey, one-time Paralympian from Stoneham, and he went to Stoneham High School. Next up, we have Griffin Lamar, sled hockey, one-time Paralympian from Haverhill, and he went to West Virginia University. And next up, we have Julie Latai, speed skating. She's also a one-time Paralympian from Medfield. Went to the University of Utah. Sean O'Neill, wheelchair curling, born in Worcester and grew up in Forestdale. Went to Boston College and Harvard Law School. Then next up we have Matt Brody, ice hockey from Millis, plays for the Minnesota Wild. And lastly on this, I have Noah Hafen, ice hockey from Norwood and plays for the Vegas Golden Knights. So, wow, we got a lot to root for there, don't we? Okay, my next story I have is titled, Surreal Cape Cod Wheelchair Curler Will Compete for U.S. Medal at the Paralympics. On a recent weekend in January, Sean O'Neill sat poised in a wheelchair on an ice rink in Falmouth, encouraging athletes who were trying out the game of curling. That was a beautiful throw, he told one young curler. You're throwing some great rocks. 4 years ago, I was sitting where you are, he told another. Now, I'm going to the Paralympics, so watch out. A similar training event at the same venue, the Cape Cod Curling Club, introduced this 39-year-old lawyer to the sport. Now he's hooked at a star athlete. O'Neill is one of seven athletes getting ready to represent the United States in wheelchair curling at the Milano Cortina Paralympics, which begins on Friday, March 6th. More than 600 athletes with physical disabilities from around the world will compete in six sports: wheelchair curling, para biathlon, alpine skiing, cross-country skiing, ice hockey, and snowboarding. Weeks before opening day, O'Neill told GBH News that he was thrilled to join the team for the first time. It's really an honor. It's surreal to be going to the Paralympics, and I couldn't be more excited, focused, he said, trying to fine-tune our curling as a team to be the best we can be there. Wheelchair curling is similar to able-body curling, sometimes called chess on ice. The players slide stones into what is called a house across the ice, aiming to get as close to the center of the target as possible, while blocking and bumping their opponent's stones. The biggest difference is that there is no sweeping, where players use brooms to influence the path of the stone. Instead, wheelchair curlers throw using a delivery stick, which are up to 8 feet long. We have to be that much more precise, more accurate with our shots, because there's no sweeping to help to correct or to try to get some added distance, O'Neill said. It's got to be good right when it releases from that stick. He's tried a number of adaptive sports, including basketball, rock climbing, pickleball, and rowing. But O'Neill said none stuck the way curling did. What has kept me so engaged and made me love the sport, I always say, is the combination of the physical and the mental, the strategic piece, and particularly strategic angle, trying to think through an end, think through a shot, really plan out a game, he said. Pete Annis, director of U.S. curling team, wheelchair team, said that the strategic mind and precision is what makes O'Neill a great curler. His, O'Neill's, knowledge of the game and the strategy is his strong point, said Annis. He's incredibly smart about how to call a game. Annis was in Falmouth recently to help the team prepare for Italy. O'Neill, who lives down the road from the rink, is now one of the four of Paralympians who have trained with the Cape Cod Curling Club and competed in past games. Other curlers traveled from across the country to train with Team USA. Already, more hopeful wheelchair curlers are looking at O'Neill as a role model. Taunton resident Mary McDonald, who is 16, says she started curling 5 years ago and also competes in adaptive track and powerlifting. She says she's getting more hooked on curling, and training alongside Paralympians is inspiring. I'd like to be a Paralympian, she said. That would mean everything to me. O'Neill will be competing in the team mix event in Cortina, which includes male and female athletes. The team's first game is March 7th. Wheelchair curling is one of two Paralympic sports in which the United States has never won a medal. Annis said the national team has been in a bit of a rut in recent international competitions. He is optimistic that having four first-time Paralympians on the team, including O'Neill, will bring new enthusiasm. O'Neill says the team has their work cut out for them. They are competing against the top-ranked Chinese team as well as skilled teams from Canada, the United Kingdom, Sweden, and Norway. The first Paralympics were held in Rome in 1960 and the first Winter Games in Sweden in 1976. An interest in adaptive sports is growing, which O'Neill credits to more broadcast coverage and social media. The competition will be available to watch on NBC and Peacock with the same level of commentary and analysis as the Olympics. In 2024, the Paris Paralympics set records for viewership. I think they, meaning NBC and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, have and continue to come a long way to achieving more parity between the Olympics and Paralympics, O'Neill said. It's been really gratifying to see Paralympic sports being put on the same level as Olympic sports, as they should be. And I definitely agree with that statement. My next story is titled, Meet the Select Group of Paralympians Who Compete in Both Summer and Winter Games. Oksana Master, the most decorated American Winter Paralympian, is part of a select group of multi-sport athletes who have been competing both in the Summer and Winter Paralympic Games. Having to master different skills to succeed is entirely different disciplines every 2 years. Trying to peak both in summer and winter in 1 year is the hardest thing to try to perfect. In addition to being at a higher risk of overuse injury since there's no true off-season, Masters told the Associated Press, mentally, it is absolutely challenging and physically, especially in the very few months of transitioning back where I can go on from what was a great peak season for me in skiing. And when I transition to cycling in the summer, it's completely different muscle groups, completely different engine, completely different way of propelling my body forward. Masters says it's hard not to panic, as it truly feels like you're starting at a sport for the very first time, even though you're coming off a very strong season and being fit for something completely different. It is truly rebuilding your body every 6 months or so, Master said. That is also probably something that is challenging, but keeps me hungry and constantly learning new things of what I'm capable of achieving in my approach to sports. Masters is entering her 8th Paralympics, having won 14 medals in the Winter Games, 5 gold, and 5 medals in the Summer Games, 4 gold. Masters became the first American to win 7 medals in 7 events at a single Paralympics in Beijing 2022. The 36-year-old Masters was born in Ukraine with birth defects believed to be related to the Chernobyl nuclear accident. Masters noted the financial difficulties of competing in both seasons, especially in sports that require custom equipment. She said hand cycles can cost from 20,000 to 50,000 euros, which is about $23,000 to $59,000, while sit skis of para cross countries can range from $9,400 to $35,400. Masters said she is lucky to have partners now, but she started chasing these dreams living out of her car. Unfortunately, I'm still paying out of my own pocket and funding my own way to compete in both summer and winter games, because there is still a little bit of a discrepancy between Paralympic athletes and Olympic athletes. And right now, both sports are very expensive, she said. All right, dual season legends. Some of the most successful multi-sport athletes in history include Heinz Frey, a wheelchair racer from Switzerland who first competed in the Winter Paralympics in 1984. Then we have Reinhard Möller of Germany, won more than 20 medals while competing in para-athletics and para-alpine skiing from 1980 to 2006. Candace Cable became the first American woman to win medals at both Summer and Winter Paralympics in 1992. She went on to win 12 medals in para-athletics, para-alpine skiing, and Nordic para-skiing through 2006. Here's a look at some of the other Paralympic para-athletes who are also set to compete in Milan. Aaron Pike, Oksana's fiancé, is an American wheelchair racer, biathlete, and para cross-country skier who will be chasing his first medal in his 8th Paralympic Games appearance. He has won 2 individual world titles in para biathlon and 1 in mixed relay para cross-country skiing since Beijing in 2022. Pike finished in a tie for 54th at the men's wheelchair marathon in Paris of 2024. Next up, we have Kendall Gresh. Gresh is a triathlete, biathlete, and para cross-country skier who won Pyeongchang in 2018 and became the first American to win biathlon medal at either Olympic or Paralympic Games. Gresh won the gold medal at para triathlon in Tokyo 2020, and she won Three more medals in Beijing 2022 and another in Paris of 2024. And next we have up, finally we have up is Andrea Eskow, the 54-year-old German who will compete in biathlon, parabiathlon, and paraskiing, will be making her 9th Paralympic Games appearance. She began her Paralympic career in Beijing in 2008, winning 7 gold medals in both summer and winter games in paracycling and parabiathlon. So, wow, these games are going to be just incredible. I can't wait to watch and just see us bring home gold. I am very excited about these games. Okay, looks like I used up all my time here on Sports Page, so I'm going to hand it over to the guys. Hey, guys, I know you got a lot of exciting news. A lot of exciting things are happening, so bring it on.
Thank you, Anna. Hi, everyone. This is Nick, and I'll be reading you a few stories here for this week's edition of AJ Sports. The first story I'll be reading is... Oh, sorry. Let me make sure I get the website correct. WatertownManNews.com. And the article is called Boston Bruins Player Gets an Education About a Sport for the Blind at Perkins School by Charlie Beatrose. Boston Bruins center Alex Steeves has played in some tough environments. Montreal, Toronto, Madison Square Garden. But on Monday, he entered the Perkins School for the Blind's gym to try his hand at a new sport, one which requires him to play blindfolded. The NHL player visited the campus in Watertown to play goalball, a game designed for the blind and visually impaired. Because participants have a range of visual abilities, every player wears a blackout goggles so their vision is completely blocked. Three players start on their hands and knees at either end of the court, and they alternate rolling the ball down the length of a basketball court toward the opposition's goal. The large rubber balls have a bell inside so players can hear where it's going. Steeves has played in the NHL for 5 seasons, 4 in Toronto, and this year with the Bruins. Through 38 games, he has scored 9 goals and added 7 assists in 2025-2026. This is my first full year in the NHL, so it's been cool for me to find a home in Boston, he said. Before the game, Steve said he wasn't sure what to expect, but was optimistic. I'm hoping I'm going to be a natural. I consider myself a natural athlete. But I'm sure the kids here can school me a little bit and make me look silly, Steve said. But I'm really excited to give it my all and really learn about what they play, and I'm just excited to be here. I think it's important athletes like myself to meet these kids who look up to us, and I can also learn about them, and trying to help me discover something really interesting. Perkins student Declan Cassidy gave some keys to playing goalball. With our teammates, we just need to use our voices, but also use any other cues so when we get the ball, we need to call out, "Got it," Cassidy said. If we can find the ball, we need to call out, "Loose," so everybody else knows to start looking for it. Keeping everybody in the loop, keeping everybody on that seam, equal playing field. We might not have sight, but we have other forms of communication. Steve's played 4 games, each several minutes long, with members of the Perkins Towerhawks goalball team. Each player was introduced for the crowd watching from the track circling the gymnasium. We have Juliet right wing. At center, we have Alex Steeves from the Bruins. At left wing, we have Sarah, the public address announcer said. During the action, Steeves blocked a few shots and rolled a couple goals. He and his teammates also let in a few of their own. About a dozen Tower Hawks subbed in during the afternoon, but Steve stayed on the court the whole time. Cassidy said getting on the court with a professional athlete was a treat. It was really special, Cassidy said. Goalball is a favorite sport of mine. It's a great team sport. Lots of camaraderie, communication on the court. I love it. We've gone through a lot of practices preparing for this day. It's been a great game, Cassidy said. Steve enjoyed his time playing alongside the Tower Hawks. It's always fun getting out in the community and doing stuff, but this was a real pleasant surprise, Steve said. I wasn't totally familiar with the sport, but being able to have this opportunity to play four games, I was surprised they didn't yank me out and send me to the bench a couple times. But I was able to stay in there for all four games, learn the rules, and get comfortable. I ran into some sharpshooters the last couple games, but I guess I've got a lot to work on. Cassidy had good reviews for Steve's first time playing goalball. He did pretty good, Cassidy said. Yeah, for a first-timer, you know, someone who doesn't play with balls on a daily basis. Steve said he got to hang, orient himself without being able to see. I felt like I was pretty good at feeling for the tape and the net and stuff like that, but a couple times when I saved the ball and then I didn't have it right away and the ball was loose, Steve said. I'm always relying on my vision and stuff like that, so maybe my hearing isn't as good, and just trying to find the ball was really difficult for me. To be honest, all my saves were just lucky. I was just them hitting me. Sometimes I thought the ball was on one side, and then it came on the other. He admired the Perkins students' skills. They're tremendous athletes. I was saying earlier to someone, every sport is different, Steve said. You use different parts of your mind and body. Some sports are more brute force. Others are touch and using your brain. So it was just a real pleasant surprise today, getting to learn about this great sport and these great student athletes. So I'm just happy I got to do this. The next article I would like to read tonight is from Golf Business News. It's entitled, Garin Park to Host Introduction to Golf Sessions for the Visually Impaired. Coaching sessions for golfers with sight loss and visual impairments are being offered at a golf complex in Essex. A new partnership between England and Wales Blind Golf, Southend in Sight, and the Norman Garin Trust is set to transform access to golf for people living with sight loss and visual impairment across Essex. The collaboration brings together national expertise, local specialist support, and outstanding facilities at Garin Park Golf Complex to introduce golf as an inclusive, sociable, and confidence-building sport for beginners with sight loss, as well as those who may have played historically but stopped due to deteriorating vision. Every day in the UK, at least 250 people begin to lose their sight. For many, this life-changing experience can lead to isolation, reduced confidence, and withdrawal from hobbies and social activities they once enjoyed. The new partnership aims to address this directly by creating a welcoming pathway back into sport and into community. To officially launch the initiative, a dedicated sight loss golf clinic will take place on March 24th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Garin Park Golf Complex in Southend. The session will be hosted on the venue's innovative Top Tracer range, where cutting-edge technology is helping to redefine accessibility in golf. Top Tracer technology tracks the flight of the golf ball and displays its path, distance, and accuracy on individual TV screens in each bay. For visually impaired and blind golfers, this removes one of the traditional barriers to participation, the need to see where the ball travels. Instead, players can receive instant visual feedback on screen, alongside verbal guidance from coaches and support volunteers. The ambition extends beyond a single event. The partners hope Garin Park will become a recognized hub for visually impaired and blind golf in the region. Participants will be able to progress from the digital driving range to the par 3 shot course, and ultimately to the full-length 18-hole course, creating a sustainable pathway into the sport. Southend Insight will work closely with local individuals and families to encourage participation, while England and Wales Blind Golf will provide specialist expertise in coaching and adaptive techniques. The Norman Garin Trust, owners and operators of the Garin Park Golf Complex, see the initiative as a natural extension of their charitable commitment to inclusion, well-being, and community engagement through sport. The next story I would like to read tonight is from Radio Times. Which sports are at the Winter Paralympics? Check out the full list of sports, disciplines, and new events at the Winter Paralympics in 2026. Whether it's speed, strength, skill, or endurance that excites you most, you'll find your fix over the next 10 days at the Winter Paralympics in 2026. Across the six winter sports at Milano Cortina 2026, para-alpine skiing, para-biathlon, para-cross-country skiing, para-ice hockey, para-snowboard, and wheelchair curling, there are 79 medal events and nearly 700 athletes competing. Mixed doubles curling is the only event making its debut at this year's Winter Paralympics, and there will be Brits competing for the first medals, with Joe Butterfield and Jason Keane set to take the ice. In total, Paralympics GB have 25 athletes going to Milano Cortina 2026, and there is optimism that they could return from the Italian Dolomites with between 2 and 5 medals. The joy of the games is that there is something for every fan, whether you're a diehard or a casual, and that an event you've never heard of before could be your new obsession by the time the closing ceremonies arrive. Radio Times brings you the full list of sports and disciplines on show at the Winter Paralympics in 2026. Para-alpine skiing. Men's downhill, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Women's downhill, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Men's Super G, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Women's Super G, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Men's giant slalom, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Women's giant slalom, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Men's slalom, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Women's slalom, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Men's super combined, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Women's super combined, sitting, standing, visually impaired. Parabiathlon, men's individual, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's individual, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Men's sprint, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's sprint, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Men's sprint pursuit, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's sprint pursuit, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Para cross country skiing. Men's sprint classical, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's sprint classical, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Men's 10K classical, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's 10K classical, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Men's 20K freestyle, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Women's 20K freestyle, visually impaired, sitting, standing. Open 4 by 2.5K relay, mixed 4 by 2.5K relay. Para ice hockey, mixed tournament. Para snowboard. Men's banked slalom, SBLL1, SBLL2, SBUL. Women's banked slalom, SBLL2. Men's snowboard cross, SBLL1, SBLL2, SBUL. Women's snowboard cross, SBLL2. Wheelchair curling, mixed team, mixed doubles. The next article I would like to read tonight is from the Daily Breeze. Blind, visually impaired students enjoy special soccer experience in Carson. The Los Angeles Galaxy dedicated its first blind soccer pitch in Carson on Wednesday, March 4th, and welcomed nearly 60 LAUSD students for a special training program. The Los Angeles Unified School District students, who are in grades 3 to 12, are blind or visually impaired. They got to be on the pitch at the Dignity Health Sports Park and go through dribbling, passing, and penalty kick sessions, according to a press release, as well as a 2v2 demonstration match showcasing the skills and teamwork of blind soccer athletes. The U.S. Association of Blind Athletes partnered with the L.A. Department of Recreation and Parks Play L.A. Youth and Adaptive Youth Sports Program, the Galaxy and LAUSD to put on the event, which was part of an ongoing effort to expand adaptive sports opportunities ahead of the L.A. 28 Paralympic Games, the press release said. Blind soccer will make its debut at the games. Adaptive sports aren't just for some athletes. They're for all athletes, Austin Dumas, Play LA's chief operations officer, said in a statement. Our goal is to make sure every young person in Los Angeles, regardless of ability, has the opportunity to play, learn, and grow through sport. Events like this showcase the power of inclusion and the spirit of our city as we build momentum toward the LA 28 Paralympic Games. USA Blind Soccer Men's National Team members Charles Catherine, Ethan Coons, Alvaro Morena, Ricky Castadenda, Oseas de Leon, John Marquez, Noah Beckham, and Brant Heron led the training program for the students, as did the team's head coach, Jorge Polanco, and Play LA blind soccer coach Evelina Cabrera. The event ended with a dedication ceremony for the Galaxy's blind soccer pitch. The dedication of LA Galaxy's first blind soccer pitch is a proud moment for our club and our community. Tom Braun, the Galaxy's President of Business Operations and Chief Operating Officer, said in a statement, "We believe in the power of sport to break down barriers and create meaningful opportunities for all athletes." And that'll be it for me on this week's edition of AJ Sports. I'll hand it off to Chris to finish off the episode. Take it away, Chris.
Good day, sports enthusiasts. Chris here, coming to you with a few more stories just to round out our time together. Let's dive right in. First up, blind tennis world number one sheds light on hidden barriers faced by the sport. London-based Naki Rizvi has risen to the top of the world rankings for blind tennis after only discovering the sport for the first time in 2015 and has called for greater support. The sight of a Londoner at the top of a world sports ranking ought to be cause for celebration, but Naki Rizvi's rise to the blind tennis ranks has gone unnoticed by many. Rizvi, who represents Pakistan, but has been based in the UK for close to a decade, became absolutely hooked upon being introduced to tennis as an adult in 2016. He was born visually impaired, losing all sight at age 7, but quickly picked up a knack for the game. Blind or visually impaired tennis is played on a smaller court with a ball which makes noise. Equipment doesn't come cheap, with players forced to pay their own way, making for an environment which can leave some feeling as though they didn't have it in a way. Everyone has to start somewhere, though, and wheelchair tennis began with obstacles of its own before reaching the point where it is included in the Wimbledon program. Speaking to Mirror Sport at an event held by tennis charity Young Champs, he lays bare just how challenging things have been, as long as the support received by British men's number one Jack Draper along the way. "I think blind tennis still is a less understood sport in some ways," Rizvi says. "Not many people know about it, so unless there's organizations that actively promote it, it's not televised. It's not really talked about in the media. People generally don't know about it." Wheelchair tennis, for example, started in 1976, if I remember right, and I think it was only 20 years later that people really started to recognize this as a sport. I'm hoping with blind tennis, because we already have a precedent, so it won't take us long. But sadly, we still don't have much media presence. Even for the World Games and World Championships he played in last year, there was pretty much no media there. So he was glad to have some here who can shed light on it a bit more. "Jack Draper's involvement," Rizzi says, "was a happy accident. When we train at the National Tennis Center, sometimes there have been few players like Jack Draper who have been amazing, watching us from up on the balcony and going, 'I want to give this a try.' It's something completely new," he says. I think he actually did an Instagram video last October where he talked about blind tennis. But generally, we don't really see much of that, and I hope more of that will happen. A video shared by the LTA in September 2023 shows Draper trying his hand at the sport, laying bare the on-court challenges it brings. As Rizvi explains, though, there's nothing compared to the obstacles. Players forced to deal with just to make it there. "Firstly, there needs to be recognition that there is a sport like this that exists," he says. "There are people who put in a lot of time and effort and passion behind the game. In the World Championships now, and I won last year, there was no prize money at all. Zero. We have to pay to enter, and there's also other barriers we face as well. We can't just stay in a cheap hotel. We have to think about how accessible it will be. Can I get to the venue easily? Especially if you're in more unfamiliar places." These tennis balls for the blind tennis, just by themselves, cost $8.50 per ball. Incredibly expensive, and they're very flimsy, because they're not manufactured here. You have to bring them from abroad, so they don't have a very good shelf life. So it ends up being a very expensive sport overall. Group coaching for blind tennis can be tricky as well, because if you have too much noise, then you can't really hear the ball. You often have to rely on one-on-one coaching and a slightly quieter setting as well, so there needs to be recognition and hopefully a bit more research from the mainstream companies. A bit more emphasis on raising the profile of other forms of tennis as well. Rizvi has called on big sporting bodies to start banging the drum for his sport, be that four Grand Slams, the LTA, or anyone else. His work with Young Champs, though, comes following at recognition that accessibility and access can take different forms when tennis is concerned. Launched in April, Young Champs is a charity providing free coaching to help those from lower-income backgrounds get into tennis. It has targeted 10,000 hours of free coaching through its Project 10K initiative, with founder Chris Marshall taking action, because there is no recognition or recognized pathway for a child from a lower-income family or even a working family to get there. Rizvi says he was pretty much on board immediately after learning about the work done by the charity, immediately being impressed by children's eagerness to learn during a session with Young Champs at Larkhill Park in South London. While appreciating that enthusiasm, though, he stresses the need for continued support as he draws parallels with the obstacles faced by blind tennis and those keeping children from lower-income backgrounds from taking up tennis in any form. I think that's where the whole idea of intersectionality comes in, he says. A lot of the barriers are different, but actually a lot of them are fairly similar. You just have to translate them in a different dimension to make it work, but effectively you need a similar solution. And I do hope that people can see beyond just that particular characteristic and make it open to everyone, because a lot of the barriers are very similar. Tennis has this perception of being such an elitist sport, and I think that one of the mental barriers that needs to be broken as well, to say it's open to anyone and everyone. Alright, next up. Park City man who found solace in adaptive hockey aims to bring professional team to Utah. Park City, Utah. Ahead of the NHL draft, the excitement over the Utah Hockey Club has been palpable, especially for Park City local Dave Nichols. He is fresh off his second NHL-sanctioned championship with the Vegas Golden Knights sled team, an adaptation of hockey for individuals with physical disabilities. Now he's eager to bring professional sled hockey to his home state. You feel good about yourself, and other people feel good about themselves when they have an opportunity to do things that they never thought they could, says Nichols. Hockey is a sport he never thought he would do. I had never played hockey before my accident. I still don't know what offsides is, he laughed. Skiing was his first love until an accident on the hill resulted in a spinal cord injury that changed his life forever. However, this ambitious athlete at heart refused to let his physical disability slow him down. Nichols soon found a new love on the ice in an adaptive sled with a modified stick in one hand and a modified goalie glove in the other. This is a standard goalie glove that's been modified, he points out. It allows him to sit in the sled and move around on the ice and defend the goal, he tells us. This new sport changed everything for him. He went on to help start the Vegas Golden Knights sled hockey team, an NHL-sanctioned team for players like him, making weekly commute to Vegas. Really, it's all about inclusion and giving everyone an equal opportunity to participate in sport, says Nichols. The team took home their second national championship at the 2024 U.S. Hockey Sled National Championships in Westchester, Pennsylvania in April. It's our equivalent of the Stanley Cup, he adds. Pushing the boundaries in sports is nothing new for Nichols. About 20 years ago, he pioneered the sport of para bobsled where at the Olympic Park. I do not like when people say no, he laughed. Day to day, there are a lot of things people don't see when you're in a chair. They don't see the pain. Sports gets you out of there and lets you do your thing. And you know, you're not thinking about anything else, he describes. Sports has been his escape, his outlet, his refuge. And now with the NHL in Utah, Nichols has a new goal. To bring an NHL-sanctioned sled hockey team to his home state. Based on his track record, if anyone can do it, it's him. It's been a long time coming. So many people have been waiting for this for the years, Nichols says. In the meantime, he is still a Golden Knight. Nichols is putting together the first major sled hockey tournament with NHL-sanctioned teams at the Park City Ice Arena from September 27th to September 29th. Now here's an interesting one about blind wrestling that I don't think we've ever really touched on. So here we go. Pine Richland wrestlers help teach sport to the visually impaired. Owen Long loves wrestling and appreciates any opportunity he can to share his passion with others. So, when Pine Richland coach Ian Appalapanap approached the team about spending the day teaching the sport to visually impaired kids at the Envision Blind Sports Camp in Erie, he immediately volunteered to help. Long wasn't the only Rams wrestler to sign up. A total of 8 members of the Pine Richland wrestling team made the drive to Penn State, Barand, on July 15th to give lessons to visually impaired kids from across the country. It was fun to go out there with my teammates and show them a sport that they may end up liking, said Long, who will be a junior this fall. I think wrestling is a very accessible sport for visually impaired athletes because there's a lot of feeling and sensing pressure. It was a very cool experience to help out with something that is much bigger than me. At Lenape, assistant coach Rob Hunt, Long, Robert Hoy, Matthew Hoy, Sam Harris, Alden Rockies, and Nathan Painter were the Rams who made the trip. They did 6 one-hour sessions with different groups of campers that ranged from partially blind to fully visually impaired. The training sessions focused on different moves that are feel-based. "I got a lot more out of it than I thought I would," said Harris, who is an up-and-coming senior at Pine Richland. "I didn't know how fun it would be going into it, but it turned out great. I loved helping out. It gave me a lot of respect for them and how they get through their day-to-day. Appalachian had worked with Envision Sports camp founder Wendy Fagan in the past when the camp was in Slippery Rock, but this is the first time he had done so since it moved to Erie. He was unsure how many of his wrestlers at Pine Richland would volunteer to go up for the day, and was pleased with how many were willing to donate their time. "I figured it'd be me and 4 or 5 kids going up in my truck, but we got such a good response that we had to rent a school van. I think our kids got a lot more out of it than they may have been expecting. Not only did the kids at the camp get a lot out of it, but I think our Pine Richland athletes did as well." There's been a track record of visually impaired athletes excelling in wrestling. Derek Cote, a legally blind wrestler, won 3 state titles in Maine and is currently wrestling in college at Southern Maine. Another legally blind wrestler, Jay Spencer, won a state title in Alabama in 2019. He wrestled at Huntingdon College in Alabama. Wrestling has a modified rule set that if you're wrestling a visually impaired person where you have to keep in contact with them, visually impaired wrestlers can enter the same event as everyone else. "I think that is a special part of why kids liked wrestling. It's field-based, so they can pick up it intuitively, and it's a sport they can participate in without a lot of accommodations. It's cool that they can go home from the camp, and if they want to, sign up to participate at their local high school." Long said at least one of the groups in each session told him that wrestling was their favorite sport they tried. "Some of the camp participants have wrestled before and others that were trying it out for the first time. Regardless of the skill level, Long was happy to help. They were all out there giving their best, whether it was their first time or not," Long said. "It's a sport where they can get instant feedback." All right, and next up, U.S. Paralympian Melissa Stockwell is helping triathletes with physical disabilities reach the starting line. American Paralympic bronze medalist triathlete Melissa Stockwell knows firsthand the struggle athletes with physical disabilities have getting into sports, let alone trying to compete in a triathlon. Stockwell lost her left leg in a roadside bombing as she served as the first lieutenant in the U.S. Army's 1st Cavalry Division during the Iraq War. She received a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart, and later became the first Iraq War veteran to compete in the 2008 Paralympics. She competed in swimming events before later turning her attention to the triathlon. Stockwell is raising awareness about her charity, Dare to Try. Stockwell has the participant of PNG's Athletes for Good grant because of her work through the organization. Stockwell told Fox News Digital in a recent interview she helped co-found the charity with her 2 friends in 2010 to help disabled athletes get the opportunity to reach the starting line of a triathlon and finish it. "A lot of the times we say that that the finish line is just the beginning, just the self-confidence and self-worth of what they're able to do. And they realize how much, and they realize how much ability is in their disability," Stockwell said. The Athletes for Good grant, "We were very humbled and excited to receive it. Was incredibly honored to be one of the chosen athletes to receive the grant. Our nonprofit is small. The money will go a long way toward helping more athletes get into the starting line and realize what they're capable of." Stockwell, who won gold medals in the Tri 2 events at the ITU Triathlon World Championships in 2010 and 2011, said it meant a lot to her to be able to give back this way. "It's huge. As an athlete with a disability myself, I found my community and my people through sport. A lot of the times, they feel alone. a lot of times before they come to dare to try. They've never even seen another person, much less an athlete missing a limb. And we bring them into one of our three-day camps, and they're suddenly surrounded by athletes just like them. Suddenly, they don't feel alone anymore because they have this sense of community. I can't say enough about the positive impact it has. Stockwell is among the 20 athletes receiving $24,000 in grants to support their cause. The initiative is between P&G, the International Olympic Committee, and the International Paralympic Committee. The group recognizes athletes and para-athletes who have helped their communities while also giving it their all in their respective sport. Now here's a cool one. Metro Detroit blind skateboarder invited to test Olympic course in Paris. You don't really know what you're capable of until you put yourself there and try. Athletes from across the world flocked to Paris for the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. It's the second time skateboarding will be included in the sporting events. One of those athletes calls Metro Detroit home. Nick Mullins is an adaptive skateboarder. He was invited to test the skateboarding course in a demonstration skate. Grind rails, ramps, and stairs aren't the only obstacles Nick deals with while skating. He's also completely blind. Nick says since about 10 years old, he's had a skateboard attached to the bottom of his shoes. He says because of skateboarding injury, he lost his vision at 18 years old, and he's hoping to his trip to the Paris Games will be a vision for others to get up after the worst falls. I was really excited to see how the course was, said Nick Mullins. 7 Detroit News caught up with Nick at his home turf, Modern Skate and Surf in Royal Oak, just days before he set out for Paris. It's kind of like a jam format, where it's 5 to 10 people, very skilled people. They basically just fly around the park, demonstrate how well they can skate, Nick said about the skate. He added, it's for adaptive skateboarding. We're trying to get adaptive skateboarding into the Olympics. Nick will be seeing that Olympic skateboard course in his mind's eye. When he was 18 years old, Nick fell while skateboarding and got road rash. He said he didn't think anything of it at the time. That road rash led Nick to developing MRSA staph infection, which put him in a month and a half medically induced coma. Nick had a 1% chance of waking up. It ended up ripping my retinas from the back of my eyes like wet wallpaper, Nick added. It was enough to be like, oh, there's light in the room. That's it. Then I went in for surgery. They helped replace some of my retina. One day, I remembered just opening my eyes and the light was gone. Nick says after being in a hospital bed for weeks and losing his ability to see, he had to relearn how to walk, function in a day-to-day life before even thinking about skateboarding. Nick adapts by skating with a cane in his hand and listening to the sounds around him. The way I see in my mind, I hear everything around me, but my brain is making up like a 3D world of what's around me inside my head, said Nick. He even got the attention of Tony Hawk during a Salt Lake City skating event. Tony Hawk's 13-foot vert ramp was brought to the event Nick skated in. You don't really know what you're capable of until you put yourself out there and try. You can do some very incredible things if you just get out there and try to do it, Nick said. He added, the only disability is having a bad attitude. That was very impactful to me. You've been listening to Audio Journal Sports Page, our effort to look at sports from a different point of view. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. This is Chris, along with Anna and Nick. If you have any information on any disabled sports and would like us to share it with our listeners, give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Thank you for listening.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.